Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet,
sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, you have a great topic called Breaking Organization Ties. How to have a more fulfilled life in your job, your current job. Today I have, again, our guest, returning guest, recurring guest, Darrell Green, Dr. Darrell Green. He's going to talk about his new book, and he'll be on the air in a moment. Dr. Green, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's going on, Tim? How's the weather?
It's hot in Dallas, Texas. It's like, you know, I was in Vegas last week, and, you know, it's hot there, but it's hot here.
Yeah.
It's like baking hot, because the only thing with Vegas, when you touch something, is really hot. Here, it's just Texas heat. Well, thank you for coming on the program again.
I'm looking forward to engaging you on this critical topic now.
Well, tell us about, you know, we know about yourself, so kind of tell us about this book. What inspired you to write this?
It's a great question. I work in an organization, highly talented people, and one of the things that I saw, there was a office manager or a secretary. I was talking to her. She had worked. She was over 50 and had a bachelor's degree in business, and she was an office manager. She had all these great suggestions, and the managers really undervalued her. And she told me one day, she said, "You know, I spent over 20 years in the department, and I just feel so underutilized." And so it kind of made me think, how do people function in the organization where they hate their job, and they think they're undervalued and really not appreciated and really could do more? How do you survive that? Because, you know, with 15 million people unemployed, you know, somebody could easily say, you know, you should be, managers telling them, you should be glad you have a job. And really, that's the mentality that's going on right now.
Well, do you think that is the, you know, the government has always been the privileged? I mean, if you have a state job, I mean, if you have a government job, you have like an entitlement.
Sure.
Because, say, my taxpayer, money goes into this.
Yeah.
However, it, you know, that mentality is something from the past, because we know, regardless of whatever administration comes in next year, there are some people going to be losing their jobs.
Yeah.
They might have to be realigned somewhere else. They might be offered some other branches that they need more help in, but we know there's going to be some cuts. So how do you tell that person who...
Well, I was just going to help you out. You know, that's something I actually studied, because one of the things that I looked at federal jobs, and I looked at even when maybe the Republicans were in power under Ronald Reagan, you're talking about 1 million jobs and federal employees. And I looked, you know, even when, under Clinton years, you really hadn't seen all that much. I mean, reduction. I just say that. I think there are some critical skills that need to be done. But then when you get into politics in terms of what organizations go away, I think that's what happens, that everybody has skin in the game, and so you don't see those reductions. So I'm just optimistic, you know, in terms of, you know, I think a lot of things, you have a political appointees, so it's a very difficult situation. But you know, a lot of people are very frustrated, you know, because of bureaucracy, and that's not only in government jobs, but that happens in large corporations such as IBM and maybe even Texas Instruments.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, just go back to the Reagan years.
Sure.
I remember part of it. I don't remember part of it, but I know there were some reductions, but
sure.
there was an increase.
Sure.
Can you tell us what happened during that particular administration and what we now have today?
I mean, that's a big field. That's really not my expertise, but I do know that they did do some back in the 80s, and it happened. Corporations saw a lot more of that, but there was an overall downsizing of employees, basically taking getting rid of middle management to what we call streamline, and so you saw the emergence of outsourcing. Companies such as China and India are now emerging or becoming very dominant because of those areas. So it was a business model, you know, that you know mm-hmm. what they were doing is we called they stripped out non-core competency functions. So if I'm in I'm General Motors. And my whole goal is making automobiles. Then certainly things such as making the parts can be outsourced. Maybe even some of the suppliers. And so then you keep what you do well and you outsource what other functions. And really it amounts to saving money. You know, it's cheaper if I gotta pay a guy at General Motors $50 an hour as on the lines, and I can pay somebody. In one of those third emerging countries, I can pay them perhaps $10 a month, and so we're really companies right now. That's what makes it very interesting. Companies are trying to this whole concept of job creation. I think is really funny because businesses are not in the business of creating jobs; they're in the business of making money. And if people get hired, that's great. But if they don't, then so be it.
Wow. And tying that all back to this particular book,
sure.
when you wrote this book and fulfillment, you know, how can you fulfill yourself on that particular job? I mean, you can get so many rewards, so many accolades, so many trips,
sure.
so many, you know, so much money, then you become immune or numb
mm-hmm.
To the ideas. How can you break that tie and still be fulfilled?
That's a great question. Well, I think it goes back first. You got to understand what you really want and what your interest is. And I just wanted for your listening audience, you know, this whole concept of an ideal job. Well, what is an ideal job? Well, ideal job involves first having an interest in something. So I really enjoy writing. So you take the interest and you take the abilities, and you put those things together, then you have your ideal job. Most people don't have the ideal job, and you know. So, if your ideal job, you want to be a nuclear engineer, and you hate math, or you hadn't gotten your first degree, that's going to be difficult. So,
mm-hmm.
one of the things is you have to decide what you enjoy. And now, if you're like I said, you're in a mundane job, like you're a janitor, perhaps you're a janitor, and you're not getting opportunities. So, one of the things I encourage is entrepreneurship, and I'm seeing a lot of that. People, we call them people are moonlighting, trying to take other opportunities, or even volunteering. You have a certain interest in a certain skill. Maybe you want to be a human resource person. You're a janitor. Well, I've told individuals there are a lot of companies that would love to have your expertise, and you can build that. And that's actually how I got an opportunity to start teaching at the professor rank, being an engineer, teaching business.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I went to a school that was struggling, and I donated my time. And before you know it, I was able to leverage myself into a paid job outside of that institution. So it can happen, but you just have to be focused in terms of knowing what you really want.
Wow. So, you know, T.D. Jakes talked about, I think, he focused the whole month of January. Even he
mm-hmm.
did a mention on Oprah's show, a lifetime show and a life skill show, that you have to have passion, provision.
Sure.
And I can't think of the other three, but passion was the biggest thing.
Sure.
It's not because of, hey, I want you to be an engineer or my son to be an engineer because
sure.
I know he makes money and he'd be this and that, but everybody's not really cut out to be an engineer.
Sure.
Everybody's not cut out to be a teacher.
Sure.
true. How can you discern between, you know, let's take it back for a second and go through the graduating senior, and he don't know that senior, female or male, don't know exactly what they want to do.
Sure.
And, you know, when we grew up, we had the military, we had religious, yeah. if you can get it. You had a skill, or you go to college. So you really have four things that you can do. And I don't think parents are really pushing them in those particular fields, but also what their passion is. How can you figure out what's the passion of your child that's graduating?
Well, one of the things, actually, I talk to class, and I talk to even my students. One of the things I look at, and I have to take a test, and the test, a mental test, is can you think of that time or that moment where you really felt good about the job or activity that you were doing? What was it? For me, I love sharing information, and so you take that and you build on it. And maybe that's something where you concentrate in. Well, perhaps that was when you were helping others in a certain setting. So I mean, there's all kind mm-hmm. of once you know what you have a passion about, then you can go. I mean, you can go online. You can talk to a career, a service individual about gauging those things. But for most individuals, I call myself a tent maker. And a tent maker basically is what you're saying is I have a day-to-day job that I like, but maybe it doesn't capture all of who I am. So then by night, I do other things. I reach out. I do things that I really enjoy and fulfill. Now, a lot of people look for short-term gains, but over time, you can get to a situation. Well, you can sever yourself off and do what you really enjoy. And I think that's really what's rewarding for it, that you have a focus. And I see a lot of that. I work a lot with a lot of technical individuals, a lot of engineers. And there was one lady, she's a civil engineer, making good money, got a master's degree. And she loves cooking. She really enjoys cooking. So she started doing mm-hmm. catering. And her long-term goal is to eventually have her own restaurant. So she's talking about what most people are talking about now is the exit strategy. And one of the things she mentioned about young people, I've seen situations where young people start off, you know, you got a guy just graduated making $50,000, you know, doing engineering. He gets there, he's in the Des Moines, Iowa, you know, if he's African American, and there's no social life. So he leaves, he quits his job, he stays on the job for at least a year, quits his job and go to Hot Atlanta. And you ask him, I said, do you have a, do you know anybody there? Yeah. Do you have a job? No. But why did you leave? this is happening across the country. They're saying, I'm not having any fun. And so that's what I'm saying. So some of these things, you know, for the first time in American history, we're dealing with four generations in the same place. You're dealing with the... of course, you have, I call it the greatest generation, those individuals that were born in the 40s. You have the baby boomers from 46 to 64. Then I'm a Generation X, 60, 65 on. And then we call it Ekam boomers or also millennials, those individuals that can work their computer. So you have a lot of people have very different interests. And what the hardest thing for managers now is how do you manage those different individuals? And a lot of people are still managing people the same way we managed during the Industrial Revolution. And we just have two – I mean, kids are smart. You know, everybody has a different thing. So I think that's really the challenge for most organizations. How do you motivate and inspire those individuals for greater performance?
Wow. Well, we're going to take a break real quick.
Sure.
We'll be back in about 40 seconds. We'll be back with Dr. Dara Green.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida, is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
I'm back with Dr. Darrell Green. We're talking about his one of his books. It's regarding my screen went blank real quick. It is organization breaking organizational ties. A question real quick. Now, going back to the kid regarding Atlanta.
Sure.
And I know the Midwest well, and a lot of these, one thing you can always count on with any place in the country, black people are going to congregate together.
Yeah.
Same thing with any ethnic group. They're going to find their community.
Sure.
And there are going to be concentrations of different levels. Now, they might be spread out in different parts of the city, but they're going to go to church in a certain way, certain area, or there are always going to be one or two mega churches that geared to that particular, might be Hispanic or African-American, Asian. And why didn't that person actually levitate to that and try to meet people first? Because there is a different world. There is the Mount Iowa, there are communities like that.
Yeah. I think one of the challenges, but you know, it's the whole thing. That's the other book I wrote, Job Strategies for the 21st Century, is the whole thing of trying to help young people, guide them on. And, you know, we have I'm Generation X, so my kids are millennials. So, you know, sometimes they know it all. And one of the things that my parents, who were part of the greater generation, they endured. They had mental toughness. They were in jobs that, you know, they were being disrespected and were doing, but they had a way of being mentally tough. And so that means, you know, maybe I'm in a situation for 5 years. And maybe I build my skill set that I have enough experience that I can go to Atlanta or New York or Chicago, but a lot of people don't want to make that sacrifice of suffering. You know, being in a situation will not be as diverse, but building those skill mix, and that's really what the dilemma is. I mean, I go to universities all the time visiting students, and for the most part, they don't want to leave. They want to go to some place that's hot, and you know that's, you know, got a lot of happiness going on, but they don't. I say, go with a young man and young woman, and but you know, so that's really the dynamics that, you know, they're comfortable in those situations, and so it makes it very difficult to branch out, because right now in the 21st century, right now, you have to create a very unique brand, and part of that, companies expect experience.
Wow. And frame it, you know, in your book, you talk about framing the real problems, and you have several chapters, household times to live, you know, dead-end employment and personal prison. Kind of tell us about, in your book, tell us about part one.
Okay. In part one, I do talk about the hostile environment that employees live. An example that I give is the disrespect of employees. Right now, managers, most companies are trying to save money. USA Today had an analysis that said with record highs in terms of overtime and part-time work, that most people work right now an average of 33 hours, and that's so they don't have to pay benefits. So the one joke I mentioned to you is that of the CEO, and he was walking around very arrogant, going through his factory, and there was a guy standing around on the wall, and he asked the guy, "How much money do you make?" And the guy said, $400. And so the manager went up to his office and came down and gave the guy $1,600, gave him four times what he made, said, "Hey, take that." So the guy walked off and left. So the manager looked around and said, "By the way, who was that guy?" And they said, "That was a Domino Pizza man." So, you know, it's just the arrogance that a lot of the companies have toward the employees. So it makes it very difficult for them in terms of surviving. And a lot of people feel like they're in dead-end jobs. A lot of the statistics that go on in terms of the employment rates, there are a lot of what we call underutilized individuals working jobs that they really don't, that they're overqualified for. And really what's crazy about that is that most companies are now expecting entry-level people that have 3 to 5 years of experience. So there's a saturation of all these people with experience. And so an employer now, they say, I don't want a guy that can pick black olives. I want a guy who can pick green olives. And so if you pick green olives, you're not qualified for the job. And so that's really how picky organizations have become in doing that. And so a lot of individuals are very discouraged, you know, in terms of young people, because of the economic crisis, people aren't leaving. So you have people that are 60 and 70 years old are staying in the jobs, and you have the entry-level jobs. Well, those that most experienced people are now taking those jobs. So where do the young people go who graduate from college? So that's really the dilemma in framing the real problem that we have. And a lot of times we put ourselves in our own personal prisons. We believe that we're not big enough, smart enough, pretty enough to deserve those jobs. So we do have some self-hate in a lot of people thinking that they shouldn't deserve something better. And that's framing the real problem.
Okay, and then part two, exploring the American dream. We have three sections on that: better decisions, dream job, and personal vision.
Yeah, in the better decisions, one of the things I've tried to devote my life to right now is making better decisions. I believe if you can improve the quality of your decision making, you can increase your life. And if you look at the number of people that's been incarcerated, the number of people that are in bankruptcy, they're in debt. They tried to live a lifestyle that their bank account couldn't support. I think making better decisions is very important in terms of having a better life. You know, is it better to now compete with the Smiths? They have a Lamborghini or a Bentley. Is it enough for you to do that when you can't really afford that? You're trying to struggle to make ends meet. So really understanding. Making better decisions in terms of finding, and even relationships, being unequally yoked. You with a joker that loves to spend money, but it's really not working. So that's one of the things we say. And just again, having that dream job. You know, I encourage students. I encourage people to dream. Dream about the job that you want and desire. You know, just think about people who gave LeBron James a lot of hate, but LeBron James. He took the risk. He left his comfort zone, and now we see the benefits of that. So even his critics are taking notice of that. So those things are very important. So it goes again to the last point in Chapter 6 on breaking organization ties, having a vision. You got to know what success looks like, not your mother, your spouse, but you have to have that vision. So many people have no vision.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And the third part of this, you have shaping the future, marketable skills, which we touched at the very beginning, inspirational personal calls, and entrepreneurial spirit.
Sure.
Can you talk about those three?
Yeah, having marketable skills, one of the things, and again, sometimes our comfort zone, you know, I talk to people all the time. It tends to be having marketable skills. You could be a street cleaner. A garbage man. But if you could pick up an additional skill, you could really transform your life. The perfect example I would give is globalization. Globalization has connected the worlds together, the countries together. If you could commit to learning Spanish, if you could commit to learning Asian language, and we know that the Asian Pacific is really going to be one of the most dominant parts of the world in the future. If you could commit to learn those languages, I could guarantee you, you would find a job. You would find a good job because people looking for people who have multicultural. Now, my daughter just she attends Hampton, and she's got back from Italy, and I was asking about that. She was the first of our kids to ever go to Europe. She mentioned that one of the downsides that she saw was she saw Americans, everyone. In Europe, that she was in, most of them could speak more than one language. She said she felt stuck because in America we could only speak one language. And so that's why I would say you could lift your kids out of a certain social level by just investing some time in having them learn another language. They could be very competitive. So, and STEM. We call STEM is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. That's another thing. If a kid could commit to learning those things, because we're going to have a shortage of those skills. And one of the biggest trends right now in the future is that because of globalization, companies from across the world are going to be trying to locate their talented person. So if you're a person, you have an engineering background, or even if you have a business background, you understand cultures, you understand how the world works, you know, you can lift yourself from your situation. So that's having those marketable skills is very important. Again, being inspired, having that passion. There are a lot of organizations can you know, we have a lot of kids without parents or adequate parents. You could commit yourself to a cause. And by doing that, you could energize yourself and become refreshed, even if you're working in a stale job that you hate. And an entrepreneurship, I think having the control, doing the things that you want. I have my own business. I think, besides working a traditional business, that there's a certain fulfillment that comes when, you know, I don't have to deal with bureaucracy. I just do the right things. And, you know, I'm network. I understand my customer. I try to build a relationship with them, and you get reward for that in the marketplace. So I do like, you know, capitalism in terms of that way. If you do what you're supposed to do, you serve your customer, you will get rewarded in the end. So those are some of the cornerstones of Shaping the Future, Part 3 of Breaking Organization Ties.
Perfect. Well, we're going to conclude the segment. And we're going to go into your other book in about 3 minutes.
Okay.
But this show was called Breaking Organizational Ties, How to Have a More Fulfilled Life in Your Current Job with Dr. Darryl Green. And we're going to sign off on this broadcast, and we're going to re-sign on in less than 1 minute and start the next show right at, within the next 4 minutes. Thank you. I really appreciate it, Darryl. And, look forward to the second part of the interview.
Sure.
Okay, take care. Everybody, you're listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. You can download this episode on iTunes on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening, and take care.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.